apologies that I have received. Honorable Killian, who is still on sick leave, booked off. Honorable Maseko, on Science and Technology Committee commitment. Honorable Mafulo, on Minerals Committee commitment. Minister in Cabinet, Deputy Minister, who is actually traveling to Mali. The apology I received on government business. Those are the apologies, members, that I received. Comrade Suela. Education, okay. I didn't receive, so we know that Suela apology. Members, we have circulated firstly the fourth term program. I think that's what we need to deal with before we get into the presentation with the team that is here. Any comments from members on our motion?
Thank you, Chair. Obviously, you know, we have very little choice about what we have to get done next term. But I would like to just suggest on the activity of the 8th of November, the presentation by the Department on Cyber Security, to ensure that the Cyber Security Hub from CSIR is with us as well. I presume that that would be who the stakeholders are. But yeah, that would be good. And also, I'm not quite sure whether the Minister's National Cyber Security Advisory Council is functioning. It was appointed by Cabinet at the end of the previous term. If they can also be there, if they're still functioning, I'm not sure if they are. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We'll definitely make that. That's why we put stakeholders so that we get the relevant people. What we'll request from the Department of Chelem is just to assist us in the people who are noting that we've been at the hub when it was launched, that people are working there. If we can get the relevant people who are actually, I know the CSIR from the side of the science and technology, but you know better if we can make sure that the relevant stakeholders who are involved in the cyber work, cyber security work, are part of it. I think that's a good suggestion that has been brought here. Okay. Anything else, members, on the program? Okay. Thank you very much. Can I request that we adopt the program so that it's formalizing our program? Honorable McKenzie, second that. Honorable Dungin, thank you very much. Now, we're dealing with the presentation today, briefing by NEMISA, Tim, the entity, take us through. You know, members, at the beginning of the year when we dealt with our annual performance plan and budget, unfortunately, we couldn't look at the work of NEMISA. So we requested that following the meeting we held with the minister on the strategic, the quarterly performance, we've set aside today as a day that we can deal with the issues around the NEMISA in totality, just to say. I hope members have received their presentations. I know that we were a bit slow this week on presentations, and my apologies, colleagues, I think, because we are used to having one meeting per week with a cluster, and I know that you will receive your presentation for tomorrow today, hopefully latest by 11. By the time we finish here, we should be able to circulate the presentation. So those delays, we apologize. We will get there. We just loaded ourselves with a lot of work from the team here and all that. I'm going to request the board chairperson to lead the delegation, firstly by introduction, so that we know. I always prefer that people introduce themselves so that we can put as well the name to the face, and then after that we'll allow the board chairperson just to make some few remarks, and then allow for the presentation to happen. Over to you.
Thank you very much, chairperson. Honourable members, it pleases us once more to appear before you to give an account of the activities of an entity called NEMISA. It's a very small entity indeed, but that is tasked and mandated with a very onerous task on the assignments that the Constitution has bequeathed upon us. With me is a team that is accompanying me. I'm the acting chairperson, by the way, chairperson. mentioned, and then we have two colleagues who come from CoLabs. If we want to engage the committee at some point, it's an opportunity to allow the colleagues to have one or two slides. I'm going to ask them to introduce themselves. It's a colleague from the UT, Vale University of Technology, and a colleague from the University of Limpopo. Can you kindly introduce yourself?
Morning. Morning, everyone. My name is Antoinette Lombard. I'm the director for the CoLab at the Vale University of Technology and responsible for Southern Gauteng and Northern Cape.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Fadiwa Rahimi, director of e-learning and also CoLab, University of Limpopo.
Thank you, sir.
Good morning. My name is Omega Shaleme. I'm the DDG responsible for SOC oversight in the DTPS.
Okay, thank you very much. I think we'll go straight to the discussion and presentation. Acting Co-Chairperson, would like to make some few remarks before the team presents.
Thank you very much, sir. I just want to bring the committee up to speed as to the state of NAMISA. We had a very unfortunate occurrences that affected our operations and workings late last year and beginning this year, when we had the resignation of the previous CEO of the board. He has been in the position for about 8 months. He resigned his position and wanted to concentrate on his work in the SAPC, to concentrate on his academic pursuit, to concentrate on business issues that he began to get involved in. Because he couldn't now spend more time with the NAMISA, and we came to an amicable resolution and agreement that we will allow him space to focus on those other activities. It then meant that the position of the CEO became vacant. At the same time, the CFO, Moira, was then appointed to head a special unit that has been created by the tax ombudsman, and she had to leave the minister after a stint of about 8 years, and that position became vacant. Hot in the heels of these two resignations was the resignation of the board chairperson, who had started a medical practice with few partners, and when some of the partners left, she had to bear the responsibility of overseeing the growing health business incentive, and that position also became vacant. In our discussions with the minister, we then agreed to allow some of the internal colleagues to ascend into this position because they have been in the organization for quite some time. And that is why Peter Ramaswana, we then requested the minister to ask him to become the acting chairperson, so the acting CEO. In the same vein, we requested Rufuno Lukeke, who was the finance manager under Moira, to ascend to the position of the CFO. The minister then requested me as a member of the board to take the reins of the acting chairperson. So that is why we have come into this situation. But given those challenges, I want to honestly commend the executive for the hard work within this very short space of time. Our audit findings are unqualified. We had to do a lot of work, we had to put a lot of effort to ensure that we stabilize the institution and focus it to the task at hand. One of the things that we did was to bring back the CoLabs and to begin to work very closely with what they do. It is to the extent that we had a 2-day workshop in Johannesburg recently in August, wherein we took stock of what they do, took stock of the challenges they have, took stock of how to manage the vision that we have together with their vision. One of the big serious challenges that we face is this continued integration, which Peter will speak to. The sooner that integration is finalized and stabilized, the better for the operations of NAMISA to focus on what it's supposed to be doing. We are very also commending the support we've received from the department, but however, there are some challenges which are going to release, and it's the presence of the department insofar as, you know, assisting some of the programs that you have, money's availability of funding and resourcing of some of the programs we have. But to date, I want to put it to the committee that we have sought to stabilize NAMISA. It's mandate is huge. We sought to fill critical vacant positions. HR manager, we're filling a number of positions so that we then focus on this massive mandate that a small institution has to be moving forward. And we hope to post very good results. Some of our targets are ambitious, given the fact that we want to do a lot of stuff, but they're also hinging and dependent on funding, which is a matter that we want to raise as a matter that we should be assisted with. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I'm happy that you clarified the matter of the swimming pool, because at some point it was given as an impression that there was a fight between the CEO and the board, and actually the board asked the CEO to leave. I can't remember, there was some meeting that we got that sense, and we're trying to get this understanding what had happened. Now, with the clarification, it definitely lays the issues to rest, and we clearly understand what has happened. It's just unfortunate that there is a mission second, I think we raised it at some point with the department, that the way they have had it almost brought a bit of instability, knowing that it's not a tool of an emissor. When people decide to say we are going, you can't stop them from that. But I think, thanks for clarification, teacher, and I hope teacher, the issue of the board is being resolved. Because we can't have 18 people in the board. And how long that is going to take, you know. Are you able to give an indication?
Chair, we have run the nominations and process, and the matter is now with the minister. He will be taking it to the next cabinet meeting. So everything has been finalized.
Okay, let's proceed with the presentation. Thank you.
Get into the APP as well as indicate the internationally. We're quite confident that we'll continue to control this space again by the end of the financial year. A number of scholar research exchange programs, we also plan to do that, where we ensure that we would have students either from South Africa, you know, being exchanged with students elsewhere in the world, so that we're able to then be able to access and be able to understand how things are done differently, and also expose, of course, South Africans to a developed environment, to other institutions in the world. Colloquiums, we are also planning, of course, to host colloquiums, which will enable us to engage, to debate, and to be able to know how best we could do things and to improve on them. One of the major things that we're also hiking up on is thought leadership, small symposiums, seminars, workshops, where we engage with leaders, practitioners on issues that relate to ICT, including industry, of course, in terms of their target. And lastly, Chair, on this particular program, the Program 5, I must indicate that we have also removed the National eSkills Summit, which is Package 5.2.1. We realize that we will not be in a position to deliver that because it requires quite a number of planning and time to get engaged on it, so it will be off. All the targets that we have revised and removed from the current PPP are planning to ensure that in the 2017-18 financial year that we're back into the fold. So it's not like they're completely removed, but we will then come back in the next financial year. Chair, I think at this stage, if you allow me, we could give to the CFO to take us through the MTF allocation.
Thank you, Chairperson and honourable members. I'd like to take you through slide 14 that talks to the MTF allocation. We are currently in the 2016-17 financial year, which the approved baseline is 37 million. And then for the additional allocation, which is precisely for the establishment of INAC, is 40 million. That 40 million has been allocated strictly for capacitating our co-labs so that we are able to reach out to more South Africans to train them on e-skilling, and most of that budget, some of that budget will also go to the environmental scan that the acting CEO spoke to, and we are also planning to come up with a learner management system that will enable us to track the progress of our learners. For the 2017-18 and 2018-19, the National Treasury has also approved 42 million and 44 million for the outer year for the establishment of INAC. And the estimated budget for the 2017-18 is 43 million for our baseline and 41 million for the outer year. Thank you.
Allow me. I would like to give the time this time to Antoinette, our colleague director, to present the learner management system regarding skilling.
Thank you, Jay. As I said earlier, my name is Antoinette Lombard. I'm situated at the Vaal University of Technology in Van der Vaal Park, more specifically at the Sebo King Co-Lab and then the Science Park. Our focus as a co-lab is on e-literacy, in other words, the basic training of the nation, because unless you know how to use your device, there's no other programs and things that you can actually run. Because we are responsible for this e-literacy and we have to present it to quite a number of people and we're looking at millions that we need to train, there was a demand on our side that we need a centralized registration system and a student or a learner management system, as Rifunwar referred to. So this system was supposed to cater for the registration of the number of students, to access people, especially out in the rural areas, as wide as possible. In 2013-14, we've done a full investigation on the systems out there in the market, comparison with existing systems. All the specifications were defined, and we eventually decided to rather build our own portal as the CoLab, and then from there on expand it in order to make it a national portal. So currently the portal is up and running. It makes provision for the registration of a learner on the portal. Once they're registered and they've completed a basic information questionnaire, we will ask them a bit more about their own detail, what type of contact they have in terms of cell phones, their access to internet, that type of information, and that's purely for research purposes. They have access then to the e-literacy course that's on the portal, so they can actually go through it at their own time, study on it at their own time, because it's a fully integrated online course there. But the only problem we have at the moment, they need to have internet access to do it online. Due to the internet access, that's not always available, especially in the rural areas. We've made provision, we'll get into that provision just now. So for now, the student register, they get an email. Email comes back to them where they can actually activate their accounts. Once the activation is done, they can actually access the courseware. At this stage, it is only the e-literacy courseware. What we still need to do on the system is in terms of the security. And what I mean with security is that with any computer system and online system, you need to have proper security in place to make sure that it's always and at any time up and running. We also need to fully integrate that security with the existing e-literacy content. Then we also need to add SMS functionality to the system. For instance, what happens at the moment, if you register originally, you need to have an email address. The problem is a lot of people forget their email addresses. So if you forget your password, for instance, to log into the system, it will resend an email to you to reset your password. But because people don't remember their email addresses, we need to build in functionalities. For instance, an SMS. So if you want to reset your password, you'll rather get an SMS than an email. Because most people have their cell phones and they know their cell phone numbers, but they don't always know their email addresses. The last one, and although it's called a payment portal, we're more looking at a voucher system where people can buy vouchers like you buy your normal data and airtime vouchers, and then have access to the system through the voucher. The voucher does not need to be in money. It can be a zero rand or a sort of a free voucher, but we need to have a voucher system in order to have control on who's accessing the system. Also to see how far people went with the courseware, what type of courses they've done. And remember, this portal is supposed to, in the long run, give people access to different courses from different universities and colleges, not only the e-literacy at the moment. So in order to have that control and the access, we will need to implement, as I say, a payment portal, but it could be a zero-based payment. But I must also mention at the moment, the program is certified by the UT, so it is a short learning program, and the certification around that there is money involved for certification. But because not everybody will want certification, we need to include the payment option so that if they want to certify, they can pay their certification fees. As I said earlier on, internet access is crucial. Now, especially where we work in the Northern Cape, internet access is a big problem. Very few of the rural communities have internet access. So we had to come up with a different plan on how these people can actually access and do the training. Because collaboration is part of what we do as the CoLabs, we're actually going into communities, partnering with existing centres, so where there's already infrastructure up and running, and we will offer the courses there in a blended environment. So there will be a facilitator available for the people to help them the first few sessions that come in, but after that it is an online system. So what we do is we actually install the software in the centres. So it is a local installation, so no internet is required. The assessment is done locally. Obviously, the quality assurance is done from the university side in order to make sure that all the processes are up and running. At the moment, typical centres we have include a centre in Porvader, the Carstens Farms, who are the biggest exporters of grapes in the country. They actually have four centres at some of their farms. We're working in Nababeek. Now, for those of you who don't know where it is, about 15 kilometres from Springbok. And trust me, there's very little there in terms of internet access and internet capabilities. I think it's good. I mean, there's this, we have signal. Also in the R, if I can give you some of the companies we deal with, in the R, for instance, we have a center with Solar Capital, who's the biggest solar company at this stage in the Southern Hemisphere. We have a partnership in Porvader and Upington with KHI Solar One. So you can see that the partnerships with these existing companies and people are crucial for us. We're also opening up a center now in Kimberley, actually very close to the hole, whatever they call the hole. So what's currently happening is the learners who have internet access can register online and do the course online. But as I said, because of the internet access, most of the learners are not registering online via the portal I spoke about. So the biggest challenges we sit with at the moment, as Peter said earlier, is the broadband. These communities do not have access to the internet. And I think on top of the broadband is also infrastructure. Unless these people can get infrastructure in these rural communities, it is a bit of a struggle to roll it out into the rural areas. But what we do find is that more and more people who actually completed the courses will go back home and through their mobile devices teach their own families, and that was the whole idea. Because there's no way that any of the co-labs can get to 10 million or 20 million people. So the only way we can do it is to train sort of the trainers and hope that they will go out and train the rest of the people. I think that's it from my side. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I think we'll give Fariba just to talk to us about the e-health management system. Thank you.
Once again, as I mentioned, University of Limpopo and Director of e-learning. University is very excited to collaborate with INESI because our own area of research shows the receptivity of students, especially coming from rural areas, and the way they relate to technology. And as university has rural development as one of its main strategy goals, it's a welcome opportunity to collaborate and work with INESI and ANISA in these projects. So my particular area of research has been, my unit has been on use of technology with disadvantaged students, but recently with collaboration and working with health workers, we have found that there is tremendous also receptivity in rural clinics the way they relate to use of technology. The first question that we wanted to ask ourselves, why do we need to get engaged in connected health? And we found that the priorities given to us by NDP is health and education. So those are the two target areas. However, today I've been asked to talk about connected health. What we found is that in our environmental scan, when we went around, when we were given this responsibility, we found that rural clinics are completely left out. There is no system that is working. Even manual system. There is no historical information. While we found that, in a province such as Limpopo, 80% of the inhabitants are left out. They have no connectivity or access to computers. And that is the reason why e-readiness in South Africa is so low, because the majority are remaining dormant. And at the same time, we were amazed. Our experience shows tremendous interest on the part of the rural clinics. If I were to share with you the experience of the last 2 years when we have been dealing with them, I found there is tremendous receptivity as far as the health workers are concerned. How did we arrive at the patient management system? they need a system to capture information and basically patient management system. When we talked to the health workers, we also found that you just need to walk to a clinic and you see the need for automation. In this process, we had to work with health workers and the management of Capricorn District. So in the last couple of years, whatever we have been doing has been in consultation with them, and they are active participants of the process. We talked to all the service providers that we know of in South Africa, and eventually we realized the solution is in open source. So what we developed is an open source solution that is homegrown. So our technical people are the ones that have developed it, and we have total control and knowledge of how to handle it. What are the things that are going to be achieved? The focus has been rural clinics. Every aspect of the system is determined and agreed upon by the management of health workers. It's a patient-centered system in that there will be more accurate record of what is taking place in terms of in each clinic, historical information, biographical information, which is integrated with what university has already been doing in the last 15 years. All the wonderful things like shorter queues and so on, and it accompanied with the research work that has already been done is going to be continued to be done, and we are also, there is interest by a FLIR project from Europe that are interested in the same area. What has been accomplished is, as I mentioned, extensive consultation with the health workers in Capricorn District. We have a modified an open source system, which is now being used, obtained approval for the implementation by the health workers. So every aspect of what is in the system is agreed upon by the local health workers. The next step is the implementation of system in the rural areas, and we found that, in fact, parallel with what we are doing, there is a similar initiative by the National Department of Health, and the question now recently is to be able to work together to see who does what. Recently, we had a meeting with them, and we are hoping to work out a plan of how we can work together. The last thing that I want to mention is that, to our knowledge, this is the only open source system that is available in South Africa. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for the presentation. I think it really helps to have this colleague sharing with what is being done in the community. I know we did an oversight at some point when we visited one of the colleagues. Should we get the mic off so that my mic is a bit audible? Thank you very much. We did an oversight at KZN. When we went to KZN, we did the GT Congress visit. But I guess not many members were there, but it helps to hear the stories, and it enhances our knowledge and our understanding of what NIMISA does. And I think thank you very much to the team for Chairperson CEO, acting CEO for this initiative. I know I didn't know about it until you arrived today, but I think it's a good initiative that you've taken so that we further understand the work that you do and the importance and the impact of it. I think it's very, very important, and thank you very much for colleagues for sharing the work that you do with us as a committee. I'm going to open for members to raise questions, comments, and then interact with the presentation and the colleagues that are here before us. I think the other thing that I'm going to flag as well before members come in is the issue of has a business case presented to us. So our approval was on the basis of what was before us. And now picking up out of that discussion, I'm picking up CEO that you are flagging a move from the business case, which we need to note as the committee, and I hope members will reflect on it. Because at some point we need to still continue and flag it as part of our understanding of what is being done. Because we gave an approval for the measure, and therefore if there's a difference, we need to still reflect. I think this is an opportunity as well for us to still reflect on it, so that it's on record, because the process is very clear in terms of the committee stance, so that later is not seen that you change the business case without informing us. So I'm picking that up as you present that from that change is based on the intention of the task team. It really gives us some movement in terms of the curriculum and all that. And if I remember very well, during the meeting, these are some of the things the committee had flagged. The role of DHET in the whole process, how is it going to happen? And there was a recommendation to say we'd really like to see more working close relationship between what you are doing and so that we avoid duplication. I think at that time, as well, there was even a feeling that shouldn't you be at DHET as a discussion. So I'm happy to hear that, and I'm flagging it for members so that they can reflect as we interact with us, and it goes on record as part of our deliberations. I'm flagging it, members, before, that's why I needed to flag it before you start and your comments. Honourable McKenzie, I've noted you. Honourable Shin, Honourable Ndongeni, and Honourable Zokes, and that order, members.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, gentlemen, for the presentation. Let me just begin by thanking you for the clarity on the roles and positions in your organisation. During my budget speech, I referred to what I saw as the organisation being abandoned by the CEO, the then CEO, and the then CFO, as one of the reasons why we didn't have this annual performance plan table before the committee. It seemed to me that they served out their terms and then left the organisation almost floundering without any of this work, which should have been done, in my view, before they left. In that speech, I singled out you, Mr. Tommy Kaplachi, as one of those individuals, clearly confusing the chairman with the acting chairman. So let me, on record, apologise for that. So could you just comment on that for me in terms of the previous CFO and CEO, and when can we expect these acting positions, clearly, in my view, people of competence, to be made permanent? Secondly, the city of Johannesburg, you know, when Johannesburg works, South Africa works. The city of Johannesburg is launching. the mayor's speech just resounds in my mind. The city of Johannesburg launched, I'm not sure whether it's under DA administration or the previous administration, launched an online university in Johannesburg, which I thought was a very good initiative. It was essentially free e-learning. Did NSE Kamba have anything to do with that initiative? And is there anything that you can learn from that initiative? Thirdly, I looked in terms of your budget, your training. Sorry, let me just find it. Your budget for 2016, the salaries versus training expenditure. Your salaries are around. Find it now. Your salary is around 23 million. Your training for the year is around 12 million. Here we go. Budgeted 23.5 million salaries and wages, and then training and staff development 15.6 million. It seems an awful lot of money to be spending on training if you have an existing staff complement of around 42 or 43. You could almost say, well, why are we paying all those salaries if we have to upskill clearly people to that point? So perhaps you could just provide some clarity on that for me. Colab portal address, you know, as part of our roles in Parliament, oversight is one of those, and I would certainly like to do oversight on that portal, if not do the course myself and pay for certification. So if you could provide that address, I'd certainly like to log on and have a look at it myself. And in terms of your portal functionality, through you, Chairperson, some of that functionality, for example, a political party that I'm intimately acquainted with during the election makes extensive use of technology, and one of those is obviously SMS and the password reset. So this isn't anything new, it isn't pioneering work. Can you not simply take that application from somewhere else and incorporate it into your system rather than reinventing the wheel? You see where I'm going with that. Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'm done.
I'm glad to hear you are merging taxes projects, so we must just make sure that Mashaba doesn't disturb them. Honorable Sheikh?
Thank you. Previously we had news that NISA was having trouble collecting fees. There was a huge backlog of debt collection. Can you please tell us how that has improved? Also, what your fee structure is for people who come on the course. Obviously, there's obviously a great need for free course participation. But is there some kind of graduated input that people taking the courses will pay? You said a certification fee. But if people choose not to be certified, do they get trained without paying a fee? So I'm wondering who pays for what? Is there a fee structure for students taking the course? Also, is there any mapping done of what happens once they've completed the course? Do you have any idea of sort of job opportunities, placement, and those that are already employed, say, at these solar plants and farms, whether there's job improvement status within their employment structure? You talked about doing a scan of schools in the country. I mean, has not one been done before? Because it would seem to me that this has surely been around for a while. There must be a scan somewhere. Of course, at least the computer societies or something would have done something on it. Then there was the formalising the legal status. Obviously, the hiatus with staff during the past year or so has delayed the formal legal structure of INESI being sorted out. Will that now be escalated in the coming year? Will there be legal finality on the structure? Also talked somewhere along here, I'm trying to find the relevant piece, sorry. Anyway, you talked about a risk of disaster recovery, having no disaster recovery. What is being done for that? I mean, how are you mitigating that risk? Because you said you need to develop and implement a disaster recovery plan and BCP. What's BCP? Then you were talking about draft legislation to be finalized with DTPS and DHET. When do we expect to have that legislation? Because you say that not having a legislative support to perform the defined mandate, it is a risk. Are we having legislation coming down the line to us? Talk to the board. Yeah, part of your income, all these companies that you that the Colabs work with, your big grant farm and that thing, how much do they contribute financially? Do they contribute financially at all to the programs that you're providing to their staff? I think that's it for now. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Ndongeni.
Thanks, Chair. Okay. How many vacancies do you have so far? The strategic vacancies. Secondly, in your slide 8, you said you have centers the whole in all provinces, but you didn't say where. For instance, you said Eastern Cape. I don't know where in Eastern Cape. It's an example. So can you please tell us where for the site visit purpose? Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson, and presentation as well, very informative and empowering to us. The chair just said some information didn't have until now when you make a presentation. I will start with the capacity, because whatever target you said, you need to have capacity to make sure that you achieve that particular target. That you are at least trying, you have people who are in acting positions, but that in itself could be a challenge. Because acting is not guaranteed that whenever the post is advertised, you will be considered. And also tempers with someone's commitment and performance. But we really looking to that commitment of need to say you are working on that, on recruitment. But we don't know how long will it take for you to recruit the skills that you are looking for. And on training, is there any role you play in placement or just train and leave it there? Do you do some placement, assist the trainees after graduation, and the support of SMMEs, their establishment, and also support of those who are already existing? On the distribution of the survey questionnaires to the public, you know, when you say public, it's an inclusive concept. Who is actually your target group in this public? And how do you deal with the language barrier? I've never seen a questionnaire written in any of the African languages. How do you deal with that? But you're talking here about the public, where we have people who, you know, were not fortunate enough to reach a certain level of education. We have issues of gender as well. We're impressed that you have ladies, you know, in this ICT field, because there's a perception that there's a man's world. We are from that background, actually. So some of us are still seeing it in terms of a field that is male dominant. So in the number of trainees, if you can have information how many males, how many females, so that we ensure, I mean, we're sure that the transformation policy is being adhered to deal with the stereotype. And what would be the requirement to qualify as a trainee? On the number of scholar research exchange programs, which countries do you see as a benchmark? On the rural clinics that are left out, to what extent can you maybe access the required infrastructure? Because very often in rural areas, the challenge has been infrastructure most of the time. And we really applaud you for the voucher system that you have just told us about. It's very innovative, and we applaud you. And I think the last one would be the duration for the training. How long does it take for one to train and complete the course?
Thank you very much, members. I think we'll allow the team to respond for coming later. I think my reflection earlier just went, but I'll come to the issues. One of the things that I'm a bit that felt to the department around. I saw that the presentation as well takes through takes us through the establishment, more or less around the support from the department's point of view around the establishment. Because one of the things that I'm concerned about GDG is that we shouldn't be having this process prolonging more than it should. And understanding what you are saying about the new board that are coming. And it should have been even ideal to have this new board with the new establishment of the worried about that process, because even when it was part of what I had